Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Apura Kanu Apurai Kaitnut Neye Akanpo Nanason Da Medinde Ojirafo Kwesi Radnehm Pata Akan Akwamumaina Maruka Etifi Mu Ojirafo Ojiramai Mu. Greetings to all Apura Kani Apurai Kaitnut people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Akanpo Nanason Day, ancient, authentic Akan Ancestor Religion Day. My name is Ojirafo Kwesi Radnehm Pata Akan, Ojirafo of the Akwamu Nation in North America, within Ojirama, the purified nation, Apurakani, Apurai Kaitnit, people in the Western Hemisphere. Yet I say we thank you once again for tuning into the broadcast. We've opened up the chat room. If you have any questions or comments and you'd like to interact in the chat room, you must log in as a user in order to interact. If you don't have a username, you can sign up for one quickly in Blog Talk. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number 1 so that we can see that your hand is raised. For those who are new to the broadcast, we have 4 broadcasts on a weekly basis. We have Akanpo Nanason, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestor Religion, on Joda Monday nights, where we deal specifically with the Akan expression of ancestor religion, first and foremost, because we are Akan. Secondly, because of the misinformation being propagated regarding Akan ancestor religion, cosmology, culture, ritual practice, and so forth, not only from individuals in the Western Hemisphere, but from those individuals on the continent of Afrika, Afrikaid Africa, who have been infected with Christianity, Islam, Judaism, white culture, fake religion in general, fictional cartoon characters of the Bible, Quran, Talmud, and so forth, who never existed. Of course, these infections have infected their presentation of Akan ancestor religion. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan ancestor religion, which deals with our ancestral origins from ancient Kanat, the Khan land, first land, foremost land, land of the beginning, which is a title of ancient Nubia. Our people migrated from ancient Kanat, some of our people, after the fall of Kemet and Kanat, northern Kanat, Egypt, and northern Nubia. We migrated west, reestablished the Kanat Empire 2,000 years ago. This is the Kanat Empire, hundreds of years subsequent to that, because of invasions, Muslim invasions. Some of our people migrated further south, reestablished our Kanat civilization in the Savannah and Forest Belt regions. Subsequent to that, centuries later, some of our people were taken from those areas as prisoners of war and forced into North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the Musso-Okessie, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. However, we maintained our ancestor religious practices. Thus, Akan ancestor religion is called Winti in Suriname in South America from the Akan term Quinti. Akan ancestor religion is called Obia from the Akan term Obayi in Jamaica. Akan ancestor religion is called Hudu in North America from the Akan term Undu, which means medicine from roots, trees, plant life. Undu also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. These terms have the exact same meanings as well, not only in the Akan language, but also in the language of ancient Kanat and Kemet. In the Medutu, the hieroglyphs we show in our book, Hudu People, the terms Undu mean medicine from roots, trees, plant life. Udu also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. Undu also means the offerings we give to the spirits on the shrines of the deities. In the language of ancient Kemet, we give our Undu or Hudu and so forth, the term for deities as well. One of the terms is the Undu spirits. We're also called the Undu people in ancient Kanat. One of the titles of ancient Kanat or Nubia is Undu, the Undu land, and we're called the Undu people. So we show that connection in our publications. We've maintained our ancestor religious practices. It is through the maintenance of our ancestor religious practices in the Western Hemisphere that we were empowered and guided by the Yabosom and Nanano Nsamampo, the deities, and spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors to wage war against the whites and their offspring, massacre them, use chemical and biological warfare as the precedent that we established to wage against the whites and their offspring through the practice of our ancestor religion, as well as taking up metal armaments to force the end of enslavement in the Western Hemisphere. And thus religion powered that victory and so forth. So this is what we deal with on our Akanfo Nanason, ancient authentic Akan and thus religion. On Benada, Abenada, Tuesday nights, we have the broadcast Ojira, which means purification. We deal with the purification of concepts, culture, cosmology, not only Akan ancestry religion, but ancestry religion wherever we exist in the world as Afurakani, Afurakani people. We deal with how ancestry religion impacts every aspect of our lives. Ancestry religion is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. That means through ritual we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to incorporate in order to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And through ritual, we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to reject in order to restore balance to our thoughts, intentions, and actions, and thus realign ourselves with divine order. So the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance, these are the expansive and contractive poles of ancestry religion. We state that Ojida purification operationalizes Nanason. Purification operationalizes our practice of ritually incorporating law and ritually restoring balance to our thoughts, intentions, and actions. This is how we align ourselves with our culture. Our culture is the divine acceptance, love, the law of order, and the divine rejection, the divine hate of disorder and its purveyors. When we get off track with executing our divine function in creation, then we engage the ritual process to incorporate law and restore balance, accept what we need and reject what we do not need so that we can get back in harmony with divine order and align every thought, intention, and action with divine order every moment of every day. This is how ancestry religion impacts every aspect of our lives. So this is what we deal with on the broadcast, on the Ojida broadcast. On Wednesday night, at Wukuda Kuada, we have Egua Marketplace, where we showcase businesses, organizations, and institutions, those who are serving the Afurakani, Afurakani community in a positive capacity, those who maintain their ancestral religious values in the context of their service to the community. So we have showcased different businesses, organizations, and institutions. We also deal with the philosophical foundation of economic development from a grounded perspective. We have published our OCOM economic development model. You can download that model for free, of course, from our website, where we deal with economic development from an ancestral religious values-based perspective. Part of that economic development model is this notion of starving the beast and feeding the pride. That means you make an assessment on a weekly basis to determine what funds you would have potentially wasted with the whites and their offspring, and you starve the beast and feed the pride. That means you reallocate those funds away from the white businesses and direct them to the business, organization, or institution of the week. And we showcase one Afurakani, Afurakani business, organization, or institution per week for optimal capital infusion. So that's what we deal with on Abukuda, Okuda Wednesday nights, and on the Yauda broadcast, Yada Abada broadcast, Thursday night broadcast, we have Amain Sim Affairs of the Nation, where we deal with issues that confront us as a people, specifically as an Omayan, a nation, Ojida Mayan, the purified nation, Afurakani, Afurakani people in the Western Hemisphere, based on our unique experiences as those who were not only forced into the Western Hemisphere, but were directed by our ancestresses and ancestors to dwell in a certain region of the Earth Mother's body in the West, coalesce, blend ancestral blood circles, interface with the unique expression of the Abosom, the deities in this region, interface with the unique expression of the ancestresses and ancestors as they animate our people in this region, the unique expression of plant life, animal life, mineral life, and their spirit totems in this region, blending ancestral blood circles. We've allowed ourselves to forge a locative identity based on our interfacing with the Earth Mother divinities in this region of their body, coalescing blood circles, blending blood circles, incarnation through these blood circles, interfacing with and drawing in the unique expression of energy of the Abosom and the Nananoman Samafu, the deities and ancestral spirits through this region of the Earth Mother, We therefore have a unique expression of ancestral culture, identity, ritual practice, and so forth, and a unique approach to solving our issues as Enomine. We understand that Enomine as nation is a living, breathing entity that is governed by specific Abosom divinities, forces in creation. When we harmonize with one another as a collective, just like cells harmonizing with one another within a collective organ or gland, then that parent organ or gland, which is governed by specific forces in nature, we align with that organal structure and the divinities that govern that organal structure. We interface with one another harmoniously, but we also interface with the forces in nature that govern that organal structure of which we are a component part. We have a proper understanding of what an Omine and nation is. So we deal with Amaniye nationism, which is the purification of nationalism and approach to nation building, restoration, Amine Sesu rooted in our ancestral religious values. So this is what we deal with on that broadcast. And of course, we have in June coming up our Ojiramain Afashe, the purified nation, Ojiramain of Afurakani, Afurakani people in the Western Hemisphere, our Amaniye conference, our nationist conference, nationism conference, where we're dealing with nation building. It will be held here in Washington, D.C. on June 24th. You can go to the Ojiramain Afashe page. We'll have vendors. We'll have presentations on different aspects of nation building, the seven principal values of nation building, methods of food production and preservation, methods of curing disease, establishing a military structure, establishing institutions, establishing sound systems of governance and jurisprudence, the building of homes on acquired land, the manufacturing of textiles and so forth, all the elements that go into Amaiya ancestral nation building restoration. We have presentations on that. It's a free event, of course. We'll be giving away a free copy of one of our books, the Ojiramain Afashe book, volume 3, which will be coming out on that day. All of that information is on the Ojiramain Afashe page. It's free and open to Afurakani, Afurakani people only, of course, as all of our events are. All right. So tonight we want to deal with part 2 of a broadcast we started last week. We just wanted to deal with the second section. We have a publication that we will be releasing most likely tomorrow, a detailed article going into detail about this information. We're going to read from this article tonight. It will be released most likely tomorrow. We have a little bit more information that we have to include that we didn't get a chance to complete tonight, but we did want to give the information out tonight. But the article we'll be reading from will be published by tomorrow. So last week we had the broadcast, part 1, Afu Osar, 16-year anniversary or solar return of the Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction, 16 parts of the body of Osar and 16 symbol divination in Afuraka, Afurakaiden, Afurakani, Afurakani ancestral culture around the world. So we started off talking about that last week. We talked about the significance of that. We're going to pull up this article real quick, and we want to get into a little bit more detail tonight on the specific aspect of that. We talked about Afu Osar, and of course, Afu means flesh. It also means house or place of residence. So Afu Osar, the title of Osar, you see that in the Medutu, in the image we had for the promotional image for the show. His name spelled out, and that title spelled out in the Medutu, dealing with the body or the flesh of Osar. Tonight, the broadcast dealing with Osar, Sa, the term Sa, also Sahu, is a title of the constellation, the collective of stars that the whites and offspring call Orion. But when Osar operates through that constellation, he is called Osar, Sa, misnomered Osiris, Orion, and so forth. And this gives further definition to this notion of the 16 parts of the body of Osar. So we're going to go to this article real quick. Now, as we talked about last week, the Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction, is a publication we released on April 25th, 13,002, so-called 2002. So this year is the 16th year, which is a significant year. The Kukutuntun establishes the cosmological foundation of creation, starting with Amen and Amenet, the great father and the great mother. We talk about Ra and Ra'et, the creator and creatress, who are children of, grandchildren of Amen and Amenet, the supreme being. So the creator and creatress are the grandchildren of the supreme being, the great mother and great father. They are subordinate to and functionaries of the supreme being. So there's a difference between the supreme being and the creator and creatress. We deal with Ka and Ka'et. We deal with Ma'ar and Ma'at. And of course, the various divinities, Atem and Asase Nebetepet, and Kepra and Asase Nebetet, and Shu and Tefnut and Geb and Nut and Asar, Aset, Set, Nebethet, Heru, Het Heru, Heru Bedeti, and so forth. All these different divinities, forces in creation, the balance of male and female. But we also deal with the origin of the term Afuraka, Afuraikayat, the origin of the term Africa. We go into the cosmological foundation of creation as the great body of the supreme being, Amen and Amenet. Within that great divine body are smaller bodies that regulate order within the great divine body, which manifests as creation. These smaller divine bodies are the organs within the great divine body. These are the deities, the Abosom, the Arisha, the Vodou, the Ntoru, the forces in creation. Those smaller bodies, these organs within the great divine body, give birth to even smaller bodies, which are cells. These cells are plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Apurakani, Apurakani, human life only. We are cells of the organs. So when we serve our parent organ or parent Abosom, parent Orisha, parent deity, then we serve the great body, the supreme being at the same time, just as your cells and your heart, when they serve heart functions, their parent deity, their parent Orisha, their parent Abosom, parent Vodou, they're serving you, the great deity, at the same time. So that cosmological foundation we establish. We also talk about the nature of the cancerous cells that develop within the body, a very small, minute percentage that become disfigured and disruptive, and they are slated for isolation and extermination. And the whites and their offspring, white Europeans, white Asians, white Americans, white Hindus, white Arabs, white Latinos, Latinas, white Hispanics, white pseudo-Native Americans, non-black people are the whites and their offspring. They are the cancerous cells within the body of black humanity. They are slated for isolation and eradication. There is no exception to this reality. They incarnate as spirits of disorder, spirits without a ka or without a kayat, without a soul, without a divinity dwelling in the head region. This is what separates them from us permanently without exception. They will incarnate as spirits of disorder until they become extinct, until we make them extinct without any exception whatsoever. So we show that as well, and then we go into detail in the Kukutuntum about the fictional cartoon characters who never existed of any race or in any form whatsoever, including Jesus, Yeshua, Yehoshua, no matter what way you pronounce it, Yeshua ben Pandera, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, Muhammad, Buddha, Brahman, Allah, Yahweh, Elohim, all these fictional cartoon characters who never existed of any race or in any form whatsoever. We prove these characters were manufactured. We show exactly how they were manufactured, the names of deities in ancient Kemet whose names were corrupted and functions were truncated. Fragments of their functions were truncated and added to fictional white characters to manufacture these characters. We show these things for the first time that other scholars were not able to show. So we go into detail about that. We deal with the Trusri as the foundation of revolution and resolution and so forth. So that information is in the Kukutuntum. This is why most people who studied that listened to it. It came out as an audiobook first, and then we published the actual book. Free downloads on the website, of course. People who study the Kukutuntum, which is foundational, they find that just the most transformative work that they have experienced, bar none. And this is the information we've received from individuals for the past 16 years. But then we go into some detail. Because it's a 16-year anniversary, the Nananom Nsamampo are spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, as well as the Abosom, the forces in creation, inclusive of Awusi, the divinity called Awusi and Asi, called Asar and Ejikamet, Asir. They wanted us to show the relationship between the 16-year anniversary, this sacred cycle, and the 16 parts of the body of Asar, and 16 symbol divination. People born on Sunday in the Akan culture, as well as Monday, males and females, are children whose Kra and Krawa is governed by Asar and Aset. When Asar and Aset operate in harmony with Ra and Raet, they're operating through the sun, the Aten, the Atenido, the Oria. They're called Asar Ra and Aset Raet Si. Men and women born, or males and females born on Sunday, are children of Awusi and Esi, Asar and Aset, and therefore we're called Kwesi and Akosria, or Kwesi and Esi, or Kwasi and Esi, or Akwesi and Esi, and so forth. When Asar and Aset operate through the moon, they're called Ajo and Ajua in Akan, Ucho and Uchoat in Ejikamet, same divinities and so forth. And males and females born on that day, that means their Kra is governed by Asar and Aset when they're operating through the moon and projecting that kind of energy through that orb. So therefore, they're called Kwajo or Kojo and Ajua or Ajoba and so forth. So in our book, Akradin Bosom, Akan Abosom, Deities of the Okra, Okra Soul, and the Akan 7-Day Week, Volume 2, which deals with Awusi and Ajua, Asar and Aset, we go into some detail which shines a light on this notion of Asar's body being carved up into a number of different pieces. Very often you read in the text, as we mentioned last week, that Asar's body was carved into 14 pieces, but then you have other texts that talk about Asar's body being carved up or divided into 16 pieces. The Greeks, misunderstanding and misrepresenting the culture, talk about Asar's body not only being cut up into 14 pieces, but then the phallus being thrown in a river and consumed by a fish, and then that's the missing piece, and then Aset had to fashion an artificial phallus and so forth so that she could reconnect the body of Asar, mummify him, participate in that process, and become impregnated. But in reality, that story is misinformation. It's a corruption of the tale of the two brothers going back to the Middle Empire of Anpu and Bata, the tale of the two brothers text, which is a popular text. In that particular text, one of the brothers' phallus was cut off and thrown into the river, and it was consumed by a fish. The Greeks took that story, misinterpreted that, and added it to the story of Asar, Aset, and Heru. This is where they get that from. But when you read the text of ancient Kemet, every part of the body of Asar that was found around the country by Aset, there was a shrine established and built up in that specific region of the country. All parts of the body of Asar were found, including the phallus or the kote, the kat of Asar, and a shrine was established in every region, including the region where that sex organ was found. So that information has been propagated not only by white scholars that there were only 13 pieces of the body of Asar that were found, but also black scholars imitating white scholars, repeating that misinformation, and then coming up with pseudo cosmologies about the 13, number 13, and you know the 14th piece is the obelisk and you know the Washington Monument and all this other nonsense. Total misinformation. So first and foremost, in our article dealing with Afu Asar, we deal with this notion of the 14 pieces of Asar, then we get into the 16 pieces of Asar. Now, the 14 pieces of Asar has to do with Asar as well as Aset, but Asar operating through the moon. When Asar operates through the moon or possesses the moon, as in spirit possession, his divine energy is transmitted through this orb. He is thus called Asar Yah. And Yah in ancient Kemet becomes Jo in Coptic and Jo in Akan for the moon. And this is why Monday or Moon Day is called Jo Da, is the day or da of the divinity Jo, which is the moon, and people born on that day, Kwa Jo, or servant of Jo, and Ajoa, the female, and so forth. So Asar Ya becoming Asar Yo and Asar Jo, that's his title name, Shekhmet, Asar, operating through the Ya or the Jo, operating through the moon. The male moon deity is Ya or Yo, and in Shekhmet, the female divinity is Yat or Yoat, the female moon divinity. The deities, as well as the ancestresses and ancestors, have the capacity, as we know, as we can experience, to possess our people through ritual spirit possession. In this process, the spirit of the deity, the ancestor, or the ancestress, enters the body of the person and takes control. Of course, that happens on the continent of Afuraka, Afraikai, but it happens right here. In the Hoodoo tradition, which is Akan ancestry religion, the Juju tradition, which is Yoruba, the Voodoo tradition, which is Ebe and Fon, the Ovambo tradition, which is the Wanga tradition, which is the Ovambo tradition, the Ngengan tradition, the Fang tradition, and so forth. The traditions we have in North America where spirit possession takes place, we've all had some experience with it. The spirit of the deity or the ancestor or the ancestress enters the body of the person and takes control. This is analogous to a person driving a car and moving to the back seat to allow another individual to enter the vehicle. That individual takes the wheel. The original driver is in the back seat. He can see what is going on. He's still in the same vessel, but the new person who entered the vehicle is controlling the wheel and directing the vehicle. At some point, the new driver stops driving. They depart from the vehicle, and the original driver gets from the back seat and goes back into the front seat and takes control of the wheel and therefore the vehicle once again. That's what spirit possession is like, and so forth. When the deities and ancestral spirits possess our people, their spirit will enter into the physical body. The spirit of the individual goes into the background, so to speak, still remaining in the physical body. And then the deity or the ancestral spirit takes control of the physical body and operates through the physical body and transmits his or her energy to the population at the ritual for healing, for communication, for empowerment, for directives and direction and so forth, whether it's for nation building, healing, curing, government, whatever it is. We receive that energy as they are operating through the physical body of the priest or the priestess or the medium and so forth, so that we can communicate directly with the forces in creation in the human sphere. That's a temporary process, and then the spirit departs from the physical body of the person, and the person who, of course, the body belongs to, their spirit comes to the foreground once again, and they operate once again in full control of their faculties, of their physical vessels, their physical vehicles. We understand that process of spirit possession. The deities can possess not only human beings, but they can also possess animal life, plant life, and mineral life. Mineral life includes the solar, lunar, and planetary bodies, and solar includes stellar. When the spirit of the Ntoro, the god Asar, possesses the Ya or the Yo, the moon, and functions in harmony with the Ntoro, the god Jo, the moon, Asar is called Asar Ya or Asar Jo in Coptic and Akan. Moreover, when Asar possesses the Aten, the sun, and works in harmony with the Ntoro Ra, the god Ra, the creator, he is called Asar Ra, operating through the sun, governing Sunday. But when operating, instead of not when operating with Ra, but just operating through the moon, Asar Ya operating through the moon. So we show an image of the deity Asar when he's operating through the moon called Asar Ya. We show an image of him, a late period image of him, a sculpture with the moon disc on his head. He's mummified, of course. We show that. So operating through the sun in harmony with Ra, he's called Asar Ra. Operating through the moon, he's called Asar Ya or Asar Jo. However, Al-Sar also possesses the constellation called Sa, or Sahu, which the wife's offspring called Orion, and transmits his energy through this collective of stars. In this function, he is called Al-Sar Sa, which is misnomered Osiris Orion. Now, we're going to get into that, but first, just to give you some context, as seen from Asase Earth, the moon, after its dark phase, when it becomes the new moon, after that dark phase, when it fully becomes fully dark, then after that, the next night, you see that first sliver of light. And then the next day, it becomes larger and larger, and it's a waxing moon. It takes approximately 14 days to become a full moon. And then after it reaches the full moon status, then it takes about another 14 days to return to a dark or a new moon. The 14 days of the waxing moon after the new moon, and the 14 days of the waning moon returning to the dark phase is a 28-day period. And then you include the dark moon, that makes it 29 days and so forth. The 28-day period noted in our ancient text. When Al-Sar operates through the moon, the Yah or the Yo, it is seen that his divine illumination, after its fullness, the full moon begins to be stripped away day by day, piece by piece. In this sense, the illuminate body of Al-Sar possessing the moon is torn into 14 pieces by the darkness. In this context, the Ntoro, the god Set, is associated with the darkness that is stripping away the light of Al-Sar Yah, Al-Sar operating through the moon. Once Al-Sar Yah is torn into 14 pieces, the dark moon Set is reigning or ruling. The light that would normally allow us to navigate our way on Asase Earth at night has been removed. We seek the return, restoration, resurrection of Al-Sar Yah, Al-Sar operating through the moon, in order to have our path in the dark night illuminated once again. Now, while this is the relationship of Al-Sar with the moon, with the Jo, there are also texts in ancient Kemet which reference the 16 parts of the body of Al-Sar. This is key because this number 16 is directly related to the functioning of Al-Sar through the constellation Sa, or Orion, which along with the Ntorot, the goddess Aset, operating through the constellation of Sepatit, or Sirius, misnomer by the wife and offspring, regulates cycles of renewal upon Asase Earth and within the bodies and spirits of Afurakanu, Afuraikaidu, Africans, black people. So Al-Sar and Aset, operating on Earth, of course, operating through the black soil substance of Earth and the river waters of Earth, have to do with rejuvenation and renewal and the resurrection of plant life and so forth and greenery and all of that. That's on Earth. In the stellar realm and so forth, Al-Sar and Al-Set operating as Al-Sar Sa and Al-Set Sepatit, Al-Sar operating through the star constellations, Sa, or so-called Orion, Aset operating through the constellation, and the sacred star, Sepatit, or Sirius. They're working together to revivify our solar system, transmitting that stellar energy that empowers our sun and empowers Earth as well, dealing with rejuvenation, restoration, regulation of renewal upon Earth, and so forth. So they are critical to our restoration. This is why you see them throughout the text, because they regulate all natural cycles. So we show an image of Al-Sar Sa as spelled out, and here's the critical piece. Now, you'll see this in the article, but we also have this image that we're about to talk about in our book, Kemet, Henna, Ntoro, The Black Nation and Divinity. So you can look at that book now to see this image we're about to talk about, but of course it's going to be included in the article once posted, but we did post it in the previous book. Now, what we show is chapter 148 of the Runu Pert Imheru. so-called Book of Coming Forth by Day, misnomered Egyptian Book of the Dead. This particular version we're showing the Papyrus of Ani, chapter 148, plates 35 and 36. When you see plates 35 and 36, what you see on the left are seven cows, and up under those seven cows is the bull. They're called the seven Heru divinities. And then the bull of the seven cows. That's the first thing you see. Many of the whites in their offspring just see seven cows, and they're saying, well, we're not sure if those are really the seven Heru divinities, but we're not positive in all this other nonsense. But we can show in the Akan tradition as well as ancient commanders, we're going to prove right now this is who they are. Then next you see four rudders, the four rudders of the sky. In other texts, instead of having the four rudders of the sky, you have the four sons of Heru. Next to them, you have 12 bearded deities. Then next to that, you see Seker Al-Sar in his pavilion. And then above him is a falcon-headed divinity, which is Heru. So you see Seker Al-Sar in his pavilion. So this particular, these two plates in this particular chapter 148 is critical. Because what it's actually showing is the Pleiades, the seven stars. Those seven cows are the seven stars of the Pleiades star system, which the whites and offspring call the seven sisters and so forth. We call them Abrewa Nani Mba, the elder woman and or eldest woman and her children and so forth. Right up under the Pleiades star system are the seven cows. You have the bull of the seven cows. The cow, kait, is a term for cow, kaitu, plural for cows. Then you have the ka, which is a term for bull in ancient Kemet. So you have the seven sisters, the seven heheru, but then you have the bull up under them. That is a form of men. It's patan men working together in that sacred bull. When you look in the constellation of the sky and you put a properly oriented right side up, image of the constellations of the sky right above this plate 35 and 36, it lines up perfectly with the actual constellations. White Egyptologists as well as black people studying this information never knew that these two plates are showing that. This text, this chapter 148 is showing that. Those seven cows are the seven Pleiades. Right up under the seven cows is the bull. When you look in the sky, you have the seven sisters, which is the Pleiades, and right next to them is the bull, the Taurus constellation. Then right next to them, as you see right here in the text, are 12 bearded deities. In front of the 12 bearded deities are four rudders of the sky in the Papyrus of Ani, but in other papyri, instead of the four rudders of the sky, you have the four sons of Heru. Four deities. So those four deities plus the 12 bearded deities, you see that right there. And then you see Seker Al-Sar, that form of Al-Sar, mummified in the underworld and so forth, wearing his crown. He's in his pavilion. So these are the 12 assistants or deities of Sa, the 12 Sahu deities. And then the four sons of Heru. These 12 bearded deities working along with the four sons of Heru are 16 deities. And then the star dwelling within that space is Seker Al-Sar or Al-Sar operating through the constellation Orion. It is perfectly laid out because you see the Pleiades, the seven cows, Taurus, which is the bull right there. The whites and their offspring will call Orion the hunter. So they will show those 12 stars, those 12 major stars of the Orion constellation and so forth. And then also you see Betel Guis and Rigel, the two bright stars within that constellation. And then you see what they call the shield of Orion. In reality, it's not Orion as a hunter with a shield that's protecting his body. What in reality, what it really is Alsar, the major bright star within that constellation, is what they call Betelgeuse, which is actually the star of Alsar Sa. Then you have his 12 attendants, the bearded deities, and we'll see in the text, Nejikometo, the Sahu 12, or the 12 Sahu deities. The four rudders of the sky, or the four sons of Heru, that's where the quote-unquote shield of Orion is, that are protectors of the body of Orion the Hunter. Actually, the four sons of Heru are the protectors of the visceral organs of Alsar. That's the quote-unquote shield. And then you have the 12 other divinities, and then you have, when you see Alsar sitting and standing in his pavilion, and then above him is a falcon-headed divinity, that is Heru Nech Atef, that means Heru, the protector of his father. So that falcon-headed divinity is actually the star, what they call Rigel, and Alsar below him is the star Betelgeuse, as they will call it. And then you have the 12 attendants, and then the four sons of Heru. Now, we're the first to put that information forward, but when you see in the article, we'll put a picture of that part of the sky right above this text, and you will see they all line up. You will also find that right before Alsar standing in his pavilion is Ani and his wife, and they're praising Alsar. Ani is the deceased person whose, you know, papyrus this is dedicated to, and there's a huge table of foodstuffs, of offerings, being ritually given to the divinity. That is in the exact position properly of the quote-unquote Orion Nebula, that factory of energy wherein stars are born. That Orion quote-unquote nebula is where that great offering of foodstuffs or ritual offerings and so forth that are used to provoke the energy or birth the energy or release the energy of the divinity as he's in his pavilion. So that's the Orion Nebula. Alsar, as the major bright star, Betelgeuse, is in the right space. Right above him is Heru Nech Atef, Heru, the defender of his father, which is the star Rigel, the other bright star in the constellation. And then you have the 12 bearded divinities and the four sons of Heru, which are the 16 divinities. Now, in the text of Dendera in ancient Kemet, you'll find the quote-unquote mysteries of Alsar and ritual practices. They have 16 parts of the body of Alsar, 16 vessels. They will make pieces of bread and so forth, made with wheat and honey and so forth, as ritual offerings, and 16, you know, molds of bread and so forth connected to the 16 parts of the body of Alsar and all of that. So there's a relationship with regard to this number 16. Now, we scroll down and we show an image of the four sons of Heru, the major visceral organs of Alsar, and thus our bodies as well. When Alsar is killed, his body is pulled back together and mummified and so forth. That's the first mummification process, and then we participate in that process as well later because we want to preserve our physical bodies. Our physical bodies, you know, when we make transition, the physical body begins to crystallize, and when we further that process through mummification and make that body into a crystal, it becomes a resonant center. That's the greatest ancestor shrine for the spirit that used to take up residence in that body, so we crystallize that body. One of the things that was done in ancient Kemet is the organs, the major visceral organs, were removed from the body, and they were preserved, and they were preserved in four jars, and the divinities that govern those visceral organs in the body, you see their heads on those jars. So you see Kebsenwef, who governs the intestines, and Dwamutef, who governs the stomach, and Amoste, who governs the liver, and Hop, who governs the lungs, and so forth. These major visceral body organs of the body of Alsar, but then, of course, our bodies as well. They're preserved in these canopic jars, as they're called. And the four heads of those divinities are over those jars. But then sometimes, of course, in the different texts, as we show in this article, you'll see the four sons of Heru sitting there. Sometimes you'll see, for example, in the papyrus of Hunefer and the papyrus of Ani and so forth, in another place, another chapter, you'll see Al-Sar sitting in his pavilion. You see Aset and Nebihet standing behind him. And in this context, they are Sirius A and Sirius B, and he's Orion and so forth. And you see the four sons of Heru rising up out of a Seshen or a lotus plant and so forth, and there before him as the quote-unquote shield of Orion, the protector of the body of Orion and so forth. This is what's happening. So we show these four divinities, and then we show them rising by the lotus. We show different aspects of that. Now, then we talk about the 12 bearded divinities. So we know who the four are, governing the small the intestines, Kepsenwef, governing the stomach, Duamutef, governing the lungs, which is Hop, governing the liver, which is Amoste, these major visceral organs. But then you have these 12 bearded divinities who are standing there. Very important. When you look, you can look in the papyrus of Nebseni, or the papyrus of Ani, and they just briefly mention this collection of divinities. When you look in the papyrus of Nebseni, for example, they specifically address these 12 bearded divinities as the 12 Sa deities. And, of course, they're shown as deities, of course, in the vignette, in the papyrus of Ani, but in the text, they just mention these collections of deities. But in the papyrus of Nebseni, you will see that they mention them as the 12 Sa divinities, the 12 assistants or attendants of Al-Sar when he's operating through Sa or Orion. Now, we want to read just a short section. We show that, you know, entry, the 12 stars of Orion and so forth, as it's laid out in the text. There's a specific part in the papyrus of Nebseni, chapter 64. You can download the Pert and Heru, the Book of Coming Forth by Day, Misnomer, Book of the Dead, and you can actually download the book that has the actual glyphs from Budge, not just the translation, but the actual glyphs that you can translate yourself. And they have not only from the papyrus of Ani, but the papyrus of Nu and the papyrus of Nebseni and papyrus of Anhai and different papyri and so forth, the different versions of the same text. So in chapter 64, in the papyrus of Nebseni, this is when they specifically identify these 12 divinities as these assistants of Sa, or the 12 Sa, Sahu deities, or Orion divinities. So, in one section of the text, it says, O you Aku, or illuminated ancestors and ancestors, who are 4,600,000, 1,200 are you, concerning the things which are there. I am over their affairs, working for hours and days in setting straight the shoulders of the 12 Sa gods, or Ntoru, and joining the hands of their company, each to each, pulling together the hands of the company of these 12 deities. The sixth, who is at the head of the abyss, is the hour of the defeat of the fiends. I have come there in triumph, and I am he who is in the halls or courtyards of the underworld, and I am he who is laid under tribute to Shu. I rise as the master of life or the lord of life through the beautiful law of this day, and it is their blood and the cool water of their slaughter which make the union of the earth to blossom. I make a way among the horns of all those who make themselves strong against me, and among those who in secret make themselves adversaries unto me and who are upon their bellies. I have come as the envoy of my master of masters to give counsel concerning Al-Sar. The eye shall not absorb its tears. I am the divine envoy of the house of him that dwells in his possessions. I have come from Sekhem to Anu to make known to the Bennu bird therein concerning the events of the Duat or the underworld. But what they're talking about is setting straight the shoulders of the 12 Sa deities, joining the hands of their company, each to each, pulling together the hands of the company of the 12 Sa divinities. These 12 Sa divinities are the 12 parts of the body of Asar in connection with the four sons of Heru who govern the major visceral organs of Asar. These are 16 deities working together and shown together in the text, the 16 parts of the body of Asar. Once they're pulled together, then he's reconnected. He is the one who regulates order in creation. Aset sustains that regulatory order in creation. We talk about that in our Akradim, also in volume 2, of course. So Asar and Aset together have a regulatory function in creation. He establishes that order. She sustains or perpetuates that order, expansion and contraction. With regard to him, he's regulating order in society. This is why in the physical body, the shrine of Asar in the physical body is the endocrine system. The endocrine system are the system of the ductless glands and so forth that release hormones directly into the bloodstream. Those hormones carry directives for the different parts of the body to execute their functions in the body. It is a regulatory system within the body. Now, this is very key for a number of reasons. When you look at the different parts of the body of Asar that they talk about, his head and his hand and his back and soles of his feet and all these different things, when you look at the endocrine system and the organs and glands that make up the endocrine system, then you'll see that that's the internal aspect of these external expressions of the body of Asar. And there are 16 components of the endocrine system, 16 major components. This is also something that the White Snarl Spring are unaware of. They don't understand the connection between these pieces. When we talk about 16 symbol divination that you find all over Afuraka, Afuraikayat, west, central, south, and so forth, even east and north, you will find, for example, in the Igbo tradition, the Afa tradition in Igbo, you have that sacred number 16 governed by Agu Isi, which is Akuisi or Akwesi, which is Asar, regulating that system. You have the Ifa, this is Afa in Igbo. You have Ifa in the Yoruba tradition, 16 Ikin or 16 sacred palm nuts in the Erin Dilogun system, that's the 16 cowrie shells and so forth, in Vodun when you're dealing with Fa, and Legba runs up the tree, which is called Fa, and atop that tree is Badu, the female divinity Badu, and she tells Legba which of her 16 eyes to open in the form of those sacred, you know, nuts and so forth. She has 16 eyes, and he opens them or closes them according to what needs to be done and so forth. So we're talking about this sacred number of 16 symbol divination. But it's the 16 different pieces of Asar when they are pulled together, then he can regulate order in creation. When those parts are disparate and you don't understand the connections, then the life is in disarray. But when they're mummified and he's pulled together, then he's the regulator of order. He's Dangbe in Vodun. He's Obatala or Orishanla in Yoruba. He is Awusi in Akan, Asar in Echikamet, Agu Isi in Igbo. Same deity, same function, sacred white color and so forth, regulating order in creation, and of course, regulating order within your body. Now, we want to look at briefly the endocrine system so you can see which organs, and you know the general basic organs of the endocrine system, but there are a couple of things that people are not totally aware of. The hypothalamus, part of the endocrine system, that's one. Then you have the pituitary gland, that's two, all glands secreting hormones. Then you have the pineal gland, that's three. Then you have the thyroid, which is four. Then you have the parathyroid. We've talked about this in a previous broadcast. The parathyroid is four small glands. So you already had thyroid was number four, the parathyroid, those four glands are 5, 6, 7, and 8. Then you have the thymus, which is number 9. Then you have the adrenal glands, which is 10 and 11. Then you have the pancreas, which is 12. Then you have the gonads, which are the testes of the male and the ovaries of the female. That's 13 and 14. And one thing that many people are unaware of is that the placenta is an endocrine organ. Now, the placenta, of course, is removed, you know, of course, is birthed after the child's born, but we have a practice, as this is an endocrine organ, but there's a spiritual force connected to that that's directly related to us, of course. This is why we have this practice in Afurakai of once the placenta is birthed or released, then the placenta is buried. It is interred, no different than the physical body is interred, and then there's a direct connection, and it's preserved and interred. Now, in ancient Kemet and Kanit, we see the origin of that practice as laid out thousands of years ago, going all the way back to the old empire, so-called Old Kingdom, 5,000 years ago. You have an entire cult around the divine royal placenta, where the royal placenta is preserved, it's placed in a shrine, it's carried around in processions and so forth, it's connected to the sovereign and so forth. It is part of the life of the individual. So this is one. This is number 15 of the endocrine system or endocrine system. Most people would stop there, but then there's another piece which is key, the enteric endocrine system. The gastrointestinal tract is the largest endocrine organ in the body, and the endocrine cells within it are referred to collectively as the enteric endocrine system. Just like you have an enteric nervous system that regulates order in the body through the nervous system and so forth, and a subsystem within the nervous system, you also have the enteric endocrine system. And those two major systems are regulating different aspects of the body. The endocrine system releasing hormones. Those hormones give directives released directly into the bloodstream. They are chemical messengers that carry those directives, no different than a king or queen mother making a declaration or proclamation of what needs to happen within the different parts of the empire, governed by different, you know, groups and guilds and so forth, blacksmiths and agriculturalists and, you know, builders and so forth, engineers or whatever. They make that proclamation, they release that proclamation, and that message is carried by the essain or the messenger, and he or she runs throughout the empire carrying that message. So you have the endocrine system, which releases these directives, what needs to happen, how you're supposed to function, and so forth, what your function is, how you're supposed to function to the different organs and glands within the body, regulating order within the body by releasing these chemical directives directly into the bloodstream. And that includes the enteric endocrine system. Then you have the nervous system, which has these electric impulses that carries messages back and forth. So it's one thing to have every organ and every gland, they have their function, they have their role, they know what their parts are, they're executing their function. However, there needs to be communication in between every organ, every gland, every system, every cell, or else they could encroach upon one another's functioning. So just like you have different parts of a computer or different parts of a car and so forth, each component has its own role, it has its own form, it has its own function, it will do that function, but those functions have to be integrated. There needs to be communication between the different components. So you have the nervous system, that's the communicative faculty, that's keeping that communication between every organ system and so forth so they can operate harmoniously. And then the different organs, glands, components, they're ex- executing their function. Asar governs the endocrine system. Set governs the nervous system. And these are the two major divinities, and this is why you have the brothers Asar and Set. Now, those are the 16 parts of the endocrine system, which many of these individuals know nothing about. And they regulate order in the body, but they also regulate order within the great divine body, because those are the 16 parts of the body of Awusi, or Asar, operating through the constellation of Sa, with the 12 bearded divinities, the four sons of Heru, which make up that 16 set of deities that are regulating order within the body. So, when they talk about the separation of Asar and being divided up, that's like the endocrine system not functioning properly and so forth, and someone, you know, injured and so forth, but when you're healed and things are working in a harmonious fashion, that fusion of, you know, a complementary fusion and interfacing of different organ systems, glands, cells, and everything in a harmonious fashion, now everything is working properly. Then you can identify the functions of different organs, different glands, different cells, different systems, what aspect of the body and what aspect of the life that they're governing, and you can investigate that and understand that when you study them in relation to one another and their effects on the body and so forth. That's when you're dealing with investigation or inquiry. Now you're dealing with divination. So the one that regulates everything that's happening in the body, coming from the hypothalamus through the pituitary gland and pineal and thymus and thyroid, parathyroid, adrenal glands, you know, every aspect of the body, pancreas, gonads, placenta, including that cult of the placenta afterwards and the spiritual function of that forcing creation, as well as the enteric nervous system regulating all parts of the body. This is where we get this physiologically, the sacred shrine of Asar, Dangbei, Awusi, Aguisi, Obasala, and so forth in the body. This is where we get this 16-symbol divination from. That's the foundation for various forms of divination across the continent. So we're going to have all of that information in this article. We're going to release it most likely by tomorrow, but that's key. The key piece is showing the actual representation of that directly in the text, in the plate 35 and 36 of the Papyrus of Ani, because this is information that none of these Egyptologists, as well as the black Kemetologists and so forth, they do not have that. But it's, we can prove it in the Akan tradition, of course, prove it in ancient Kemet and so forth, because it's laid out, and of course we have an image of the stars, the constellations right above the text, the images in the text, and they properly represent one another. And then, of course, the seven Het Heru divinities that you see in the text and the bull and so forth, we deal with the seven Het Heru divinities, or the seven female divinities, or the heads of seven, the seven matri clans in our Akan culture that we're all descended from. As Afurakani people in our Akan tradition, we're descended from one of those seven clans and one of those great mothers who are governed by one of those seven Het Heru divinities. If you're not a descendant of one of those seven females, then you're not Akan and so forth. But then those 12 divinities are connected to the 12 Petra clan groups, the Ntoro groups. We've talked about that in our books and so forth. But all of that information we can prove not only in our Akan tradition, but in the tradition of ancient Kemet. And then, of course, when we engage in the divinatory process, those of us who engage in divination, or if you've received divination, you understand how that works. You can see how things are laid out and how things are investigated. Things that are happening in your life, unfolding in your life, when you receive competent divination and so forth, you can get direct insight into these different parts or components or glands or structures within your life, how things are functioning harmoniously, how things have become disharmonious, and how to pull these things back together. So all of that information will be in the article. Because, of course, I'm a Sunday-born Kwesi, servant Kwa of Awusi, this is the 16th year. Of course, they directed myself to put not only create publish the Kukutuntun, but then in the 16th year to show the connection between Awusi, the 16 parts of his body, the 16th year of the Kukutuntun, and 16 symbol divination, the 16 stars of the Orion constellation, dealing with the 16 bodies, aspects of the body of Al-Sar and so forth, and the Kukutuntun being the foundational piece upon which all of our 30 books are built, and the forthcoming books as well. We have about 8 more books coming out this year at least that are in the works, and also the foundation, because it's dealing with divination, this 16th year of the Kukutuntun, where we eviscerate this foolishness of these fake religions and fictional cartoon characters, Allah and Yahweh and Muhammad and Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, Jesus, Moses, and all these fictional cartoon characters. We eviscerate that nonsense. We eradicate that nonsense. The restoration of ancestor religion. We have our Etchi Sign conference dealing with that and the Hoodoo Mind conference dealing with that. But we're in our 16th year. We're talking about divination, 16 symbol divination. And this is why the Nsamanfo, the Nananom Nsamanfo, and the Abosom wanted us to release our film, our documentary film, Amaru Kafo Adebisa Adjumadi, African American Ancestral Divination Project, in this 16th year of the release of the Kukutuntun, the 16th year, the restoration or pulling together of the 16 pieces of the body of Al-Sar into this divinatory piece. And of course, for those who have been following the work, we started the filming process last week in Florida. And now we're moving to Virginia, Alabama, Mississippi, Ohio, Georgia, Chicago, and culminating in New Orleans on May 27th, for that final piece. So we're still working on that process. So we've had over 1 million people download and listen to the Kukutuntun over the past 16 years. People have been impacted by that. We have the book that's a free download. We have the audio book, of course, that's a free download. The physical copy of the book that you can read and study, a free download with additional information as well in that particular book, as well as our other 30 books. So what we're asking people to do, because we're in the midst of this piece, if you've been impacted by the Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction, we are working on the film. The film is founded upon that work. This is the 16th year, so when we talk about divination, you see in the film we have 5 different diviners in the Hoodoo tradition, which is Akan, the Juju tradition, which is Yoruba, the Wanga tradition, which is Ovambo, Gullah, the Ingangan tradition, which is Fang, the Voodoo tradition, which is Ebe and Phone. From different parts of the country, we've maintained these ancestral forms of divination in our blood circles for hundreds of years here in North America. This is what the movie is about, the film is about. So, and it's Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction, is foundational to this film. If you've been impacted by that, you will see that, you will see its influence in the film. If you've been impacted by it, please support our work. Right now, we've had about 130 people who went to our page to support the crowdfund for the film. But we have thousands of people who download the books, about 4,500 downloads per month of our free books, our 30 books and so forth. We have had over 500,000 people watch our videos online on YouTube and so forth. This is our 335th broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. We've had, you know, thousands and thousands of downloads of these. But we are at 66% of our crowdfunding goal. Our goal is to complete the filming by May 26th, 27th, the Memorial Day weekend, so that we can move into post-production, and then we can, the editing piece, and then we can have the film released in June, which is just a couple of months away. We're on that track. We can finish that track, but we can only finish that process with the assistance of the community. So we've had over 1 million people listen to the Kukutuntun. That's more than the 130 people who have contributed, and we appreciate them, of course, and many of them have contributed more than once. This is why when you look on the page, you'll see that there are 130 contributors, but but about 240 contributions. That's because many of the 130 have contributed more than one time. Some people have contributed three or four times. Some people have contributed over six times because we've been doing this for over a year. We started the crowdfunding piece last January. So we definitely have more than 130 people who've been impacted by the Kukutuntum over the past 16 years. So we need people to show their support. We're at 66%. You can take a few minutes right now and go to the fundraiser.com/, and that's FUNDRAZR.com/ AmaruKafo_Adebisa. Any donation is welcome. Any amount is welcome. Anything helps us to get to that point. We are at 66% now. We were at just 60% like over a week ago, and we moved up to 66% because people have, you know, come through. So we appreciate that, but take a few minutes right now to go to the page and assist us in that effort, because we do need that assistance so that we can have the film ready in June. Some people have been waiting for the film for over a year, of course. We thought we had a couple of delays, but in reality, it really wasn't a delay because it wasn't time to come out last year. It needed to come out during this 16th year, this 16th solar return, this time of the Afu Alsar, and of course the divination associated with Alset as well, because our divination system, major divination system in Akwamumai and Amarokai Tifi Mu, is governed by Ajua and Ajo, Alset and Alsar and so forth. So this is the year for the divination film to come out. So we're going to go to the phone line right quick. Michio, on the phone line, you had a question or a comment, number 0217.
Yes. Heads up, Brother Kwesi. You mentioned that the placenta is buried. Is this where the practice of also burying the portion that is the umbilical cord that falls off the newborn?
What's up? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, there was a, sometimes, you know, Blog Talk will drop the call, cut a call off, but okay, I can hear you now. So you were saying, you were asking, you got cut off right before, you were right in the midst of asking that question.
Yes, yeah, I was asking about, you mentioned that the placenta is buried and venerated. Is this where the practice of also burying the umbilical cord that falls off the newborn, is that where that comes from?
Right. Yeah, that's directly related, and you'll see that even some of our people who may not have continued the practice, especially like in North America and some other places, of fully just taking the placenta and burying it. Some people have gotten back into that practice recently over the past decade or two because people are getting back involved in ancestral culture. And it's becoming more popular to ask, you know, the hospital for the placenta and so forth. But even before people started getting back into it and they have fallen away from it, one thing that they would do was keep the umbilical cord, which is derived directly from that practice.
Right. And also another question related to that, because the burying of that portion of the umbilical cord that comes from the placenta, I mean, you see that a lot in the Caribbean. And I would often hear, you know, in the Caribbean, like the elders in the community would ask someone, like if they had, a particular person had a practice of going someplace often, they would ask them, well, why are you going there so often? Is your umbilical cord buried there? Is your navel, you know, buried there? So I assume that
right.
the purpose of it was to keep you grounded to the area. Is that why it's also...
Right, it is, and that's why they would they say that, and you know that's in the Caribbean, but they say that in other places as well. It has to do with grounding, and sometimes people say if the umbilical cord is lost or the placenta is lost, then the person will be kind of aimless in life, and they would need to be, you know,
wow.
ritually grounded because they're
okay.
pulled in different directions and they're not firmly rooted anywhere. So. Yes, so that's where that terminology and those sayings come from.
That a lot. They'll say, well, why do you keep going there? Did they bury your navel string there? Or, you know. Okay. So I just assume that the purpose was to keep you grounded to the area in some way.
Right.
You know, where you were born. Or at least where they bury it, because sometimes they bury it under, like a young tree. Yeah.
Right.
You know, like in the backyard of the person's home.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Okay, so
and it's a little bit different.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just gonna say it's a little bit different now because you know, initially when we would do something like that, you know, we're living in a village. And this is where people live for hundreds of years very often, or they're living in an area where, you know, this is where their clan, their, you know, ethnic group has been living for hundreds of years or sometimes 1,000 years and so forth. So, you know, when they bury their placenta is buried everywhere. So, you know, there are thousands of them. So that's communal. It's keeping the spirits and the energy of the people all in the same area, and it strengthens, you know, the bond spiritually and physically. But now because we're moving into different apartments in different cities and getting jobs in different places and moving all around and so forth, it's a little bit different because you're not all in the same place. You're living in areas where your enemy is living, and, you know, so people will do something more portable, like, you know, burying the placenta in a large, you know, pot or something like that, drying it
okay.
out and burying it in a large pot, or keeping the umbilical cord and keeping it with them, so if they lived in one house or one apartment and they moved to another apartment, they're not going to bury the placenta in the backyard of that apartment complex, and then they move away, and, you know, a couple of years later when their lease is up, they'll never come back. So, we've had to adjust to that.
Well, I noticed that the use of the placenta is more, people are using it to make these smoothies. They're making pills and edibles. Is that part of it? I mean, I don't see this more. I mean, I see it on TV. A lot of people are doing it, but not a lot of Africans, more, you know, whites of different European whatever. I mean, over the past, I would say, 10 years, I've been seeing them doing it because they're talking a lot about the nutritional properties of it, so I see more of that practice more than the burial and venerating of the, you know, the thing. Yeah.
Right, you'll
and,
see. You'll see the whites and their offspring, spirits of disorder, engaged in that. That's not something that our people will be doing.
They cook it. They cook it a lot, like cook like steak, you know, and they serve it to their families and. You know,
right.
and they talk about, you know, that they make it into smoothies and make pills because it helps with postpartum depression. Because of course, this was the source of nutrient for the child. So they said, well, it can help prevent postpartum depression, and it could, you know, there's a lot of nutrients and, you know, all sorts of things in there. So they're encouraging a lot of mothers to save it for that purpose.
Right, so and that's why we never follow the whites and offspring, because they have no, you know, they're simply going to put forth something that's always self-destructive. But there's, you know, part of the spiritual forces that are connected with the placenta, we don't consume that. You know, there's a reason why we're burying it and preserving it for ritual purposes.
Okay, so it's burying just like you would do the burial of a person and venerating and doing, you know, similar to how you would do, like take offerings to a loved one's grave.
Right, in a sense, it's very similar.
Okay. Oh, well, thanks for the information.
Okay, Merci, we appreciate the call.
Merci.
So, just want to check to make sure we didn't miss anything in the chat room. So we have, all right, so it's only a few minutes left in the broadcast. So we're going to end the broadcast here. So it's a couple of things. We have our retreat coming up May 26th and 27th in New Orleans. Shared lodging for the retreat. We sent out an email about that. If there are people who are want to share lodging, whether you're looking to share lodging or if you already got your space but you want to share lodging and split your rental expense with somebody, you can just post that information in the event notification on Facebook, because if people are, you know, go to that and look at that, so when there's a new message posted there, everybody can see that. You can also post it on the Ojira Mind network as well. But you can post it in there because there have been a couple of people who had asked about lodging and so forth. We do have a couple of spaces left for the registration for the event. So if you would like to register for the event, go to the page, the Kai page, the Soul of Hoodoo and Voodoo page on our website. Couple of places, spaces left, and once those are gone, then the registration is closed. We only have a few weeks, actually less than 4 weeks until the event occurs, so we're very close to closing the registration out. As soon as those couple of spaces are reserved, then, you know, registration will be closed. So go to those ASAP. You can check out the installment payment option that we have for the registration fee. All of the details, you'll see that on the page, ojira.fo.com/kakayat hoodoo and voodoo, so you'll see that information for that. And, of course, once again, take a couple of minutes. We appreciate it. Even before you get a chance to, you know, once people get on the internet and they forget about what's going on, take a couple of minutes now to support the work that we're doing by going to the fundraiser page on our website to support our film. We're making that next trek out, that next filming trek this week. We're going to be going to a couple of more places, and we're on track right now to complete the film, you know, in that process, but we do need the assistance of the community in order to actually complete the process. We still have some more things that we have to get together, and the travel is expensive as well, so we're only at 66% of our crowdfunding goal, but you know, every percentage assists us in the work that we're doing so we can get it done in a timely fashion, so we can release this film and get some real information about divination, about ritual practice, those practices that sustained us physically, spiritually, and led to our liberation right here in North America. So, again, Yerase, we thank you for tuning into the broadcast and supporting our work and supporting the film. And Yebeshia Bio, we will meet again.